Welcome to Coaching Kidlit, a podcast about writing and publishing good kidlit.
We dig into various aspects of writing craft through a kidlit lens and provide inspiration and clear, actionable items to help writers like you move forward on their kidlit writing journeys.
I'm Christy Yarros, Author Accelerator Certified Book Coach and author focusing on middle grade and young adult.
I'm Sharon Skinner, Author Accelerator Certified Book Coach and author of speculative fiction and kidlit, including picture book, middle grade, and young adult.
Hey, Sharon.
Hey, Christy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I thought maybe we could help our listeners by discussing the things that we have been seeing so far this year. I think we see a lot of the same things over and over again with our clients, and I think it might be helpful to share some of, without, of course, specifics.
Yeah. Okay, so I know that it really depends on the client, but I find that a lot of clients come to me when they've been trying to write a story, and they've been trying to write a book, they've been really working on it, they may have world built, or they may have a story that they've been writing, but it's just not working. And a lot of the time, it's because they don't know their characters well enough, or they haven't developed their characters well enough to send them on this journey.
Yes.
It's one of those common things, right? It's a standard thing. And it really comes down to, it's either that they don't know them well enough, or they don't have a character arc for them because they just kind of plugged people in. So they built the world and they want to send them on a quest. And it's almost like role-playing, like Dungeons and Dragons, except for the characters aren't going to develop themselves. See, with Dungeons and Dragons, the people who are playing the characters get to pick who they want to be, and then they roll the dice for their personalities.
Right.
And stuff,
but the right? Dice has a lot to do with that.
Right?
Well, we could do that building characters too, though, huh?
We could, right? I suppose I could have more charisma that way. But when we're writing, we are in charge of that part. We're not just the dungeon master. We're not just setting up the world and the adventure. We're also in charge of the characters to a great extent. I mean, for me, because I write from character, it's really a lot of the times the characters come to me pretty fully developed. But a lot of writers come from the other side of it, and it's the character piece that they need the most.
So two things on that. One, I really do like Save the Cat. I think it's a great thing, but I find that Save the Cat, to me, tends to focus more on plot than on character. And so writers who come to me who have been using that as their guide from the beginning when they've had nothing are getting stuck because they're not developing, like you said, the character part of it. And then something one of my writers said to me this week made so much sense. She said, when she's writing and she feels like it's her voice talking and doing things and not her character, that's when she has to step back, like allowing your character to be the one that guides the story, because the character journey is what the story really is about. That's what drives the story, is the character, what happens to the character choices, the consequences of those choices, and what they choose to do after that. The whole cause and effect comes from that. She probably explained it better than I did, but she said feels her authorial voice overtaking the character voice.
I think that's a great description, especially coming from a writer, that they have that recognition, because I talk all the time about character lens and seeing the world through your character, or wriggling into your character and wearing them like a skin almost. It's a lot like acting techniques where you get inside the character and see the world and sense the world and experience the world through their perspective and through their perception. And I think that it's exactly that. When you are not doing that, then it's you and it's authorial intrusion that you end up getting on the page. And that's okay as a placeholder for the moment, but that's going to have to be rewritten, because you've got to get inside that character. You've got to show it to the reader through character. That's right. Critical.
And then you're making decisions that you, the author, think should happen for the next thing instead of this is what would your character do when your character is in this situation? How do they react? What is their gut instinct? What is their initial reaction? And what are they going to do? I mean, yes, I think a lot of us are in our characters, a lot of our own traits and things. We just do that psychologically, but ultimately it does have to be what the character that you've set up this far has to do. And sometimes, right, like you said, you don't know enough yet. You think you know enough about your character, but you haven't yet put them in this situation. So you don't know how they're going to respond. So you have to go back a couple of steps and expand what you know about your character.
Well, and that's why there are a lot of people who still consider themselves more pantsers, you know, people who write their way through the story rather than planning it out. And in fact, I still have a certain level of having to write my way in when I'm working on story, because I do come from a character driven aspect and I have to throw my characters into situations to see how they'll react, because I don't know until I put them in the situations. There have been times when I sit down at the computer and I've got it all planned out and we're going to go into the woods and we're going to take a right, and my character will get in the woods and go, oh, what's over here on the left? I want to go over here. And I mean, it's not necessarily a left turn, right turn, but it's the choice that character decides to make in that moment is different than what I had anticipated. And a lot of times I give them the leeway to do that. I just follow. I've talked about being like a journalist who follows my characters around, just reporting on what they do. Now that can also get you into trouble though, because then where's the story? If you're just kind of following them around, at some point you have to figure out the point of the story you're trying to make. And if all you're doing is following the character around, the subconscious may or may not get you to exactly where you're trying to go.
Right. You kind of have to push back on your character and say, wait a minute, why are you going right instead of left? Do you have a good reason? What evidence have you given me this far that would say, yes, that's a better choice for you than this? But as a book coach, one of the advantages that we have is that you don't have to write yourself through that situation, because we're here saying, wait a minute, why would your character do that? You have told me this, 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 and this about your character. And this is the goal that you want. And this is the journey that you think your character should take. That's not going to get them there, right?
I just a couple of weeks ago was working with a client and I was reading pages and I said, wait a minute, your character would not say or do that. You know, we're almost to the end of this story and I know this character now. And that's not who they are. That's not what they would say or do or think in this situation. I think that you should rethink this. And I love it because the writers will go, oh yeah, you're right. I just threw that in there because they didn't know what else to do at the time. But part of that too is as you're developing a scene or a chapter in a story, often you're having to focus on so many things. It's not just the one character. It's the other character. It's the protagonist. It's the antagonist. It's maybe a co-protagonist. It's some sub-characters. It can get very complicated and difficult to stay on task that single thing when you're drafting. In revision is a great place to go back and to revise those components. And in fact, I've actually told a writer very recently, go through the scene and write it through the viewpoint character's lens. And during your first revision, stay in that character, whether the chapter is their viewpoint or not. Mm-hmm. Stay with that character. Stay with how they would act, how they would behave physically, so that the other character can see that, so that you're actually showing the true character from both sides, from both inside and outside lenses.
I like that. That's a good idea. I don't know if we've disclosed this part yet, but part of our certification process that we went through with Author Accelerator to get our certification as book coaches, we did practicums and we had to work with writers on certain things. And I worked with you. You were my guinea pig for going through the blueprint. And when you did the part where we write the first scene and the last scene three different times, it was so fascinating how differently some of the stuff came out and the different details. And I just did the same exercise with one of my writers, and I warned her about what happened with you, not warned because it was so exciting, but then she did the same thing. And it was so fascinating, even though she wrote the opening scene twice from a first person perspective, they both revealed different details about themselves, about what they were looking at, about plot that was like, wait a minute, like, where did that come from? Right. And
yeah.
And I just find it so fascinating because it's like we say, anybody can have the same idea, but the execution is going to be completely different based on who's doing it.
If I lose everything that I wrote on a book, I could go back and execute it again and it would be different. Even as the same person, well, I won't be the same person. I'm not the same person now that I was 5 minutes ago. So I am a different person. So that exercise is a really interesting one. I do think that going back to what you said about Save the Cat is focused on plot. It really is a plotting tool. And it's a great plotting tool for what it does. And for some people's brains just love to work like that. There are a lot of plotting tools out there. You can use tools from the Plot Whisperer. You can use Save the Cat. You can use all sorts of plotting tools. But what I like to do is when I have a writer who comes to me who's used a tool of that nature, I love to have them drop that information that they've already developed through that tool into the inside outline, which is also a tool that we learn to use in our coaching certification with Author Accelerator, and then force them to start thinking about that inside story and how it works with the plot and to see if that plot really is doing what they need it to do as part of the engine, because it's not the complete engine of the story. It takes plot and character working together. And often what I find is that that's when they realize they don't know their characters well enough. And so I work with them on character development and deepening their knowledge of character, getting to know their characters better through some tools that I've developed. And then we start to work on that again, and it comes out very differently. And they realize that the push-pull of the inside outline helps them to see the story as a whole.
Well, when you're just focusing on plot, I think you tend to write this happened and then this happened and then this happened, and not when you have to consider the inside part also, this happened and because this happened, then this happened and because that happened, then this happened. So right. You need those two things together in order to make sure that you actually have a reason from getting from one scene to another that makes sense for your character, and it gives them the agency to make that those things happen.
Yeah, it goes back to that example. And I wish I could remember where I read it, but it was the queen died and 3 days later, the king died. Is that a real story? I mean, it's just really this happened and then that happened. But if you say the queen died and then 3 days later, the king died of a broken heart, now you have the because of that in between those two things happening. And I think that's what you're talking about right there, is that once you know your characters, you can get them to have agency. You can create their character arc within the story. And then you'll know if the plot really is working to drive them through that change that's necessary for a good story.
That's E.M. Forster, by the way.
Thank you. E.M. Forster. Thank you.
Okay. So now have a little maybe debate. I'm not sure how you feel about this. So the way that Forster technically says it is that the story is that the king died and then the queen died, but the plot is the king died and then the queen died because of grief. I feel like I think about that the opposite way.
I agree with you. So I remembered the example, but I misremembered the usage, because for me, that character arc is the grief piece. And
right.
The plot is the things that happen.
Right.
Yeah. So no, I agree with you on that. So that it's very interesting, but that's another reason why book coaches are valuable, because what we bring and what you brought to my story was the ability to question the places where maybe the authenticity was off or where things weren't quite making sense in the way that they were put into the inside outline or the blueprint. And we've taken in all of this craft information because of this is where our passion is. So we spend a lot of time with this knowledge that we can offer up, hey, this is what really works. Ignore all of the semantics about who's calling what a plot, because really he's trying to get at the same thing, what makes a story really work. But I think that the semantics, the words that he's choosing, the way he's describing it, are not quite gelling with my current experience in the world of story and craft.
Maybe part of it too is from Lisa Kron from Story Genius, because she definitely explains story as we're saying, the journey. Plot is just the stuff that happens. Story yes. is why.
I think that we come and we see things differently, because I have always said that for me, the best stories are both character and plot mixed together. There are people who say, oh, all you need is a good plot. You can plug in people. And there are some people who really, really prefer just to hang out with characters and don't worry so much about plot. For me, the best stories have always been a very nice weaving together of both. And I think that's why when Lisa Kron explains it, it resonates with me more deeply, because it's the way I've always understood story myself.
Yes, definitely. And then just how a writer would write when they're doing their world building. They know all of these things about their world, but you're not putting, hopefully, all of those things into the story, but you need to know how their bathrooms work just in case that that situation comes up. Or
you do, but you need to show it through character lens and who's paying attention to the details and how.
But the same way, you have to know all of these things about your character, even if they don't end up on the page outright, because you need to know how, why they would react certain ways. And I guess it's a little different when we're talking about writing for kids, because as Lisa talks about, the wound, the flaw that they have to unlearn in the story is going to be very different for an adult than it is going to be for a kid, because it's not necessarily solidified over 30 years of continued trauma or reinforcement of your misbelief.
Yeah, but the wound strikes deep for a kid, even if to us it seems like it's not as big a deal. Being bullied or being kicked to the curb by your best friend is devastating when you're a kid. We get older and somebody decides they don't want to hang out with us. Most of us are pretty much like, yeah, bye, if that's how you feel about it. But when you're a kid, it's devastating because you've invested all this time and energy and emotion into this relationship. And that's a deep wound.
It is, but you don't have to go back as far. I think it's a little easier to figure out the cause of that, where an adult maybe has much more work to do to figure out, why do I act this way? Oh, it's because this thing happened to me when I was in third grade. Well, hey, we're writing about the thing that happened.
Well, and that is also the difference, is we're actually often writing about the moment in a kid's story, especially targeted at younger readers. We're actually tend to be writing about that moment in time and the things that are happening around it and the adjustment to it. How does the character adjust or not adjust or make choices in the world to change their situation related to that problem, as opposed to, why am I always late to everything? Oh, it's because of this thing that happened to me when I was a kid. So yes, I agree with you that when we're writing for kids, it is very different, especially the slice in time that we're looking at, because we're usually looking closer to that slice of time.
So I think that the character work that we do as kids writers is a little different than what a lot of the craft resources tell you to do, because they're adult characters. And I find that when my writers come to me and they say that they've tried to do these exercises that they found somewhere about character, it doesn't necessarily work the same way. It doesn't apply because...
It depends on the age of the kiddo too. That's going to matter, because young adult, you're getting closer to that adult place. So yeah, that probably follows the structure or the rules a little more. the craft guidance, if you will. But you're absolutely right, especially for younger readers.
I mean, when you know, there's questions you'll see on the typical character questionnaire interview, things that you do to learn about your character. Like, what are their values? I don't know. What is an eight-year-old values? Is it necessarily their values, or is it their parents' values? Is it because of the environment that they live in? Have they had the opportunity yet to really understand for themselves and think about for themselves that this is the way that I believe things should be and it should be different?
Well, I think, yeah, because it's a little more black and white though, typically for a kiddo. So I think that the values, they have beliefs and ideas about how the world should work, as opposed to how the world maybe does work. Wow, we're getting deep into character now. Now we're really getting into it.
Well, I mean, honestly, this is where no matter where a lot of the writers come to you in their process or what it's for, so much of it, you go back to character and it solves most of the other problems. I mean, really, when you're dealing with big picture kind of things like that, getting to know deeper about your character really helps you to fix your plot and to fix your tension and your pacing. And
well, the better you know the character, the better you know, first of all, what choices they're likely to make, especially early on, what consequences are going to hurt them the most. And we really need to be hurting our characters. That's kind of our job, because we need to be pushing their buttons. And the better you know them, the more easy it is to push their buttons and make them make another choice. It's like poking them and they jump, and knowing which way they're going to jump, or at least making sure they jump in the direction that is authentic.
Yeah.
So I do think that you bring up a really good point about the difference between writing for kids and writing for adults, and how we have to look at character and how we have to look at the craft rules. That's huge.
I mean, like, so for example, one of my writers and I were working on a story, and say a child is the middle child, middle of three kids. And now they're at summer camp and it's just them. How is that kid different at camp than at home? Besides the fact that kids are probably different at camp than they are at home, because it's a different environment. But when you're the middle kid all the time, and now you're an only because everybody else is away, or your older sibling goes off to college and now you're the oldest, how that just changes so much of the dynamic of their relationship with their parents, of the relationship between the other siblings, how they're going to act, how they're going to respond to things, the way that they're treated. It came up a lot for us, and it was thinking about, well, if this sibling is not here, does this character still act the same way? And if mom is with them and dad is not, does the situation play out the same way that it would if it was dad with them instead of mom with
them? Yeah, because it's just like when we were kids, we acted very differently with our friends than we did at home. The language that we use, the persona that we take on, how we behave in different situations, same with characters, but we need them to be authentic at the same time to who we need them to be for the story. It's a balancing act. And you can't just say, oh, it's a 12-year-old, because 12-year-olds come in all sizes, shapes, colors, attitudes, heights, emotional growth, all of the things. So,
yeah. And that's another thing, especially when you get to that 12, 13, 14-year-old age, where maybe it's upper middle grade, or maybe it's kind of a young YA. And what is the difference between how the characters are? Because some kids are way more mature at 12 than kids are at 14.
Which goes back to understanding who you're writing for when you're writing those books, because how important it is to know your target ideal reader when you're trying to write for that specific kiddo. It makes a difference.
So all this to say, I'm not sure where we started and if we ended up where we wanted to, but I want to say the biggest thing that I have noticed, that I always notice with all of the writers that I work with, is that so many writers come to me thinking that it is something that is wrong with them, that they are not getting it, that why they've read all these books, they've done all these things, why can't they do this thing? And like for me, Save the Cat, I tried to use it for a novel I was writing and I drafted the whole thing out in each of the beats. And even with the worksheet of it's going to be 75,000 words. And so this scene needs to be this long. And it was so prescriptive that I didn't know what to do with myself, because I would write a scene and my worksheet said that this scene should be 2,000 words long, right? And it was 500 words, but it did the same thing that it was supposed to do. And now, what do we do? And my sheet tells me that I have to go here next. Well, I don't want to go there next.
Well, that's why there are so many different books on craft and so many tools for the same thing. There are so many ways to approach just each element, like plot mm-hmm. or what have you, and so many ways of articulating it. I mean, look at the difference between how I was explaining, even using the example from E.M. Forster, what I was thinking of his story and how differently we see it. And some of that is you hear what you need to hear when you need to hear it, which is why you and I know we both keep going to conferences. We both keep going to workshops. We both keep reading more craft books and reading books as mentor texts, reading the contemporary fiction, whatever the books are that are coming out into the world, being familiar with the publishing industry, what's on trend, how is formatting changing? And you can hear the same thing over multiple ways until one day it's the thing that you need to hear in that moment.
Yes.
That's number one. And having someone help to apply it to your situation with your writing and explain it and articulate it in relation to that is very different from reading about it in a book. It's just like you have an MFA and I have an MA, and we both had to do both theory and we had to do practicum for that. Mm-hmm. So we had to write for our practicums. We had to actually write stories and poetry and fiction, and I wrote a book. But putting the theory into practice, doing the practicum piece of it, when you're doing it in a vacuum, you don't always know if it's working for right. the particular story you're trying to tell. And having a book coach or somebody to give you that feedback, that's when someone can help you understand the application of theory to your own particular work and situation. And I think that's huge.
Especially if you're new and you don't have a community yet. Not that writing groups always help with these things, but having a writing group is still very, I think, very important. Having critique partners that can point out your strengths to you at the least, to say, oh, you're so good at this. Because I think a lot of times we need someone else to tell us the things that we're good at because we don't believe it ourselves until someone else tells it. But yeah, hearing it in different ways. I have seen, especially with our regional conferences, having seen the same presenter speak multiple times about the same topic over the years hits differently every single time,
right.
even though they're saying the same thing.
But they're probably articulating it in a similar way. But yes, when you're ready for that information too,
yes.
when you're in your craft journey, as you move forward and you're ready to hear certain information, it hits and sits differently, right?
Before I went digital, not that everyone else can see this, but you can see this, my conference notebook that I used to bring to all my conferences mm-hmm. that has all the notes. I read it constantly. I'll just go back and read through all the things. And it's like, this was in 2013 and I learned this thing that I knew.
right.
But why did I forget this? And why does this make so much more sense to me now than it did?
Exactly.
Five other times I heard it.
I will say that I did go through some really old notes recently from some old conferences, and I was just ripping pages out and throwing them away because I'm so far beyond these notes that I was taking that were so basic. I was like, I didn't know the barest thing back then. But then there are some that I'm like, oh, I got to save that one. And I put it over to the side because I got to keep it because that's really good stuff that I still need to think about and dig deeper into. So to your point, it hits and sits differently depending on where we are in our journey with craft. Well, I know we've gone on for quite a bit and we probably should give the listeners a couple of action items before we sign off. I'm going to go back to for my action item and talk about the thing that I mentioned earlier. And that is if you have story that you've been working on and working on and working on, but you don't know your characters very deeply, that perhaps you need to sit and spend time getting to know your characters a little bit better, more on a deeper level. So start looking at things through the character lens. If you can take a scene from your work and write it from the viewpoint character and keep in mind that character and what they're seeing and how they're seeing the world, and then go back and revise the same from the non-viewpoint character, but make sure that their tics and their behaviors and their facial expressions and things are actually expressing what's going on with them emotionally on a deeper level.
There's just so much we could do with characters, so many fun things. Let's see. It's not really mine because it is kind of part of the blueprint, but I think it's something that's very helpful and that we use probably all the time anyway, but this really helped in the past week with two people. So taking a scene, and if it's written in first person, write it in third person close, write it in third person omniscient, write it from someone else's perspective, and just see the difference in what your character reveals to you from just that one little tiny thing, because our subconscious works in the most wonderful ways. And even if you think you're writing the same thing, it suddenly a brother appears out of nowhere. Right. And it changes right. The whole family dynamic and everything has to be revisited, or suddenly the sass you didn't know was there before is there. And
yeah,
so I guess that's kind of what you said too, but.
No, but I like that because, and it is part of the blueprint to do that with the opening and the closing scenes, but you could do it with any scene. And the difference being that I'm saying, keep that character lens. Stay inside that character's skin throughout the writing and then jump into another character and review it and revise it from the other side of it.
But we could give probably 100 character exercises because it is really so much of the work that we do. It really is. And it's so interesting. And someone said to me that I was like a therapist for their character because you keep digging, you know, but why did this happen? Why is she like, how does she feel about that? Let's talk about it.
That's so out of character. Why is she doing that?
But it's questions you cannot ask yourself. You're not going to push yourself in the same way that someone else pushes you, because you might accept an easy answer and not even realize it's the first thing that comes to your mind, or, oh, okay, that makes sense, until someone else is poking you. So if you would like to be prodded and poked to get to the heart of your character, feel free to reach out to you, either Sharon or I, or both of us.
We're happy to do that. We're good at it.
It's so much fun. And it's worth it. It's worth it. Any character work that you do is worth it.
I agree.
So thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Coaching Kidlit, a writing and book coaching podcast for writers who want to level up their Kidlit writing game.
For more about us and to discover what a book coach can do for you, check out coachingkidlit.com and follow us on social media